Welcome to East Texas News Roundup for the week ending February the 22nd, 2019. East Texas News Roundup is a weekly review of the news in five Southeast Texas counties covered by Polk County Publishing Company newspapers, including Tyler, Polk, Trinity, San Jacinto, and Houston counties, by the editors of those five newspapers. Tyler County Booster editor Chris Edwards kicks off this week's podcast.
Howdy, everybody. This is Chris Edwards coming at you, bringing you the highlights in a rounded up fashion of news and events from Tyler County, taken from the pages and the headlines of the Tyler County Booster. So I hope everybody out there has been having a pretty good week and enjoying some of the more spring-like weather and days lately. It's starting to look a little less like a rainforest. Anyways, let's get right to it. The big news story here in Tyler County actually came to us after we'd already gone to press. The Woodville Lady Eagles are still in it. They are continuing their road to a state championship. With Tuesday night's victory, they beat the Cold Spring Oakhurst Lady Trojans 60-43. So they're going to be playing again in the regional tournament. They're going to be playing Keene on Friday at 7:30, and they're going to be playing at Midway High School in Waco. If you're a Lady Eagles fan or just want to support Tyler County Athletics and a team that's doing some great things, it'll be Friday at 7:30 in Waco at Midway High School. Come out and support the Lady Eagles if you can. And let's see them go all the way to state. Yes. Now, in other Eagles news, the boys team, they were still in it as of Monday. And that was a bi-district game. They played Buna. And that was a pretty tight scoring game. I don't think the Eagles trailed them by, you know, two or three points through most of the game, but ultimately it was the Buna who came out on the winning end of that, 73-71. So great game and a great successful season to the Eagles. So in other news, the top story in this week's edition of the Booster, we had a motorcycle and pickup truck collided last week out on Highway 190, about 8 miles outside of Woodville, going west toward Livingston. Now, there was a fatality in this wreck. It was a 53-year-old man from Magnolia named Matthew Calley. He was riding his 2018 Harley-Davidson motorcycle. And the guy who hit him, 41-year-old Derek Simmons of Point Blank, he was in a 2003 Dodge pickup truck. Both of the vehicles went off the road into the woods and caught on fire. And there were volunteer fire departments from Whitetail Ridge and Shady Grove responded and extinguished the fire. And according to a DPS report we received, Simmons, who survived the accident, told the troopers who investigated that he thought he saw headlights coming toward him in his lane. Well, what happened was he veered to the left to avoid the headlights he saw, but instead he struck the motorcycle that was coming at him, and Mr. Calley was dead on the scene. And the Tyler County Sheriff's Office deputies who responded to this incident, they requested the Justice of the Peace and a funeral home to call him out to it, and Justice of the Peace Precinct 1, Trisha Ford, came out and pronounced Mr. Calley dead. And there were two passengers in the pickup truck riding with Simmons, and they were both treated by personnel at the hospital in Woodville and released a short time later. According to DPS, this is an ongoing investigation, and they're looking into factors that might have contributed to this crash. Also this week, we have a bit of good news. There's a story in this week's edition about a young girl who's about to turn 11 years old next week, actually. But she's 10 now, and she's a fifth grader at Coleman Hill High School. And just wanted to send some props and a shout out or whatever it is, whatever the kids say when, you know, you give kudos to somebody now, to Elizabeth Bryan. Elizabeth came to interview with me here at the Booster office a couple of weeks ago, and it was really cool. Art Linklater said kids say the darndest things and even had a TV show that was devoted to that topic. And just very precocious, very full of life, but you get her on the right topic. She's really into computers and video games, and otherwise she's pretty quiet, but you get her on those kind of topics and it's just rattling off information and specifics that people probably twice, maybe even three times her age would really not have the slightest clue about. So it was a really cool experience to get to interview a 10-year-old, but the main thing and the thing that this story about her is about, the news hook, is that she basically sees problems in the world and aspires to do something about them. She's a very kind, very giving spirit at 10 years old, very socially conscious and aware too. And right now she has a donations box at a restaurant in Coleman Hill, the Texas Star Cafe, to gather donations of clothing items and especially warm winter kind of clothes. It's been lately for homeless veterans. And she told me that she came about this idea when she was accompanying her great uncle on a visit to the VA hospital in Houston. She just happened to see a homeless encampment somewhere and noticed that there was a large box that people had kind of started giving clothing to the residents of this little homeless village. People had just came by and started giving them clothes and things. And so she had an idea, you know, kind of put two and two together. Her great uncle is a combat veteran, Vietnam, and, you know, there's a problem with homeless veterans. So why not do what I can to try to help out with that? So I'd like to give a salute to Elizabeth Bryan and all of her 10, almost 11 years of living that just full of that giving spirit that you see so often in communities like ours that we serve as. There's a lot of good people doing a lot of good things, a lot of volunteer work, but it's always inspiring to see someone so young really want to step up to the plate and do some things. So if you get a chance to, if you're in the Tyler County area, pick up the Tyler County Booster this week for more information on Elizabeth and the kind of projects that she's undertaking and those kinds of things. And also news about sports in Tyler County. And we've got baseball and softball seasons are starting up and some of the other spring sports. So we've got information about those and the respective schools that are participating. So yeah, there's that. And also another thing I wanted to highlight is March the 7th, we've got a visiting author who's coming to Woodville to take part on a panel appearing with a couple of members of the clergy here in different churches in Woodville. This author named Carolyn Curtis. She wrote a book called Women and C.S. Lewis, What His Life and Literature Reveal for Today's Culture. The event is going to be, like I said, it's March the 7th at 6 p.m. So if you want to get out to that, it's bound to be a very interesting time. And we don't really get a whole lot of visiting authors to Woodville or panel discussions of this nature. And C.S. Lewis was always a really interesting writer. And I think there's a lot of layers to take apart in his work and a lot of angles to come at it from. And this is sure to be an interesting event. I think tickets are only $2. So be sure to see about that if you can make it out to it. It's probably going to be a really cool thing. And this week in the paper, Eddie Box, who's a historian, he's a retired Air Force colonel and historian who does some writing for us. He did an interview with her, a Q&A type format, where she talked about her book as well as some ties that she has to Tyler County and just kind of talking up the event. So be sure to check that out if you can. I can't really think of anything else I can really highlight or spotlight here. So with that, I guess I will bid everyone adieu for this week on the East Texas News Roundup. As always, you guys have a great rest of the week and a safe and fun weekend, and be good to one another and yourselves. So this is Chris Edwards. Thanks for listening.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Jacob McAdams, the editor of the San Jacinto News Times. It's good to be speaking with y'all on our weekly podcast. I just thought I'd go over some of our recent events here in good old San Jac and basically just tell you what all's been going on. Now, last week, on February 11th, we had the Shepherd City Council meeting. It was a pretty interesting meeting. They had some discussion on the CDBG grants, and they are submitting an application to push for a project for the wastewater systems for the city of Shepherd. Basically, they're wanting to address the sewage systems in Shepherd, and the project is a total amount of, I believe it's $275,000. The meeting was kind of quiet on some of the other ends. They had some discussion on a few other items, some that they're not, will probably be a bit more of consequence later on. But another item that should be noted is that Shepherd's EDC board now has Freddie Ramos appointed to an empty seat. Now, last week, of course, we also had Valentine's Day. And the San Jacinto County Women's League actually had their monthly luncheon and had a very interesting presentation that day. The presenter was Susan Smith, and she discussed the history and the facts of roses. Now, of course, last week being Valentine's Day, you can't have Valentine's Day without roses. It's like having Christmas without presents. They kind of go hand in hand. Of course, virtually everyone knows what a rose is. We know, of course, they represent a lot of the romantic and love, a lot of those feelings when we use them for symbolism. But there's actually a lot more to roses than people might not realize. And so just to give a few quick facts, in history, roses' usage dates back as early as the time of Cleopatra during 30 BC. Cleopatra often used them. Her bedchamber, from what I'm understanding, was covered in them because they gave off a very sweet fragrance. And, of course, if you know the history behind Cleopatra, you know that she was in a relationship with Mark Antony of Rome. And she often used the fragrance and would give him roses to remind him of her and kind of instill that memory, because the fragrance can have a very powerful impact on memory. They were also used as currency at this time because people loved the fragrance. You could use them in bartering. Emperor Nero had often showered his guests at dinner with roses to show how wealthy he was. Other historical bits, you have the War of the Roses, which took place in the late 15th century. I think it might have pervaded into the early 16th century. It was a war between the factions of the British Houses of Lancaster and the House of York. Respectively, they represented each other with the red rose and the white rose as a way to differentiate so that people knew whose side they were on out in the battlefield and at a distance. You know, and they were basically trying to find out who would be the next in line for the throne. We also have the Cherokee Rose, which the Cherokee tribe planted during the Trail of Tears. They planted the roses along the way. A very similar rose to the Cherokee Rose is the McCartney Rose. It's a white rose, just like the Cherokee Rose. Now, it's got a few differences, but what's really cool about the McCartney Rose is that if you live in San Jacinto County, you can find it. They do grow in this area. There are also a couple of other interesting little facts about roses, and I'll leave it at these two. The oldest rose bush is referred to as the thousand-year rose. It is growing in Hildesheim Cathedral in Germany. They say it's about 60 feet tall, about 30 feet wide. It's a pretty big rose bush, and it gets its name for obvious reasons, but the legends say that it has been growing since at least 815 AD. It's a little over 1,200 years, but there's no real confirmation for how long it's been growing. It's believed to have been growing for somewhere north of 1,000 years. If you want to know where the biggest rose bush is, it's actually in Tombstone, Arizona. It is called Lady Banksia. And if you want to know how big this rosebush is, it's about 8,000 square feet, which for one single rosebush is huge. They actually have to use poles to hoist up portions of this rosebush because of how massive it is. So it was a very interesting discussion. There's also a lot more you can discuss with roses. Susan Smith, the presenter, she went into a lot of good detail on roses. There's just so much you can learn about. Going into it, I had a feeling there was a lot you could discuss with roses, but I had no idea how much there really was. It was pretty interesting to listen to it. Now, last week, on February 15th, we had pretty interesting event out at the Old Town Cold Spring area. Now, for those of you who don't know, Old Town Cold Spring has a lot of the historical buildings that belong to San Jacinto County. Many of them have been moved here. They're right here in Cold Spring, not far from the Jones Auditorium. The most prominent building is, of course, the Old Jail Museum. And the San Jacinto County Historical Commission, they've done a really good job keeping that area and maintaining it and promoting this county's history. There's a lot about the county history that people may not know offhand. For instance, General Custer actually traveled through San Jacinto County in the past, sometime after the Civil War had ended. But we had a different kind of event going on there. We had a group called Haunted Rooms America come out and do ghost hunting out there. Now, of course, depending on who you are, you may or may not be interested in ghost hunting. You may be the skeptic who doesn't believe in ghosts, or you may be the enthusiast who is really interested in it. But regardless of the kind of person you are, there were some interesting things to see out here, and there were some interesting facts to learn. The group itself, what they do, Haunted Rooms America, is a company that basically, if you were interested in ghost hunting, but you just don't have the financial time to purchase what you need to do it, Haunted Rooms America lets you come out. They let you see how they hunt ghosts. They also let you experiment with some of the equipment like K2 meters, spirit boxes, and anything else that they use to try and contact these spirits. Now, the people that were running Haunted Rooms America that I was speaking to, one of them is the owner for the part of it that's in the United States. Actually, the company itself is actually from the UK, but he's over the United States portion of it. His name is David Howell. He talked to me a little bit about Sanderson County and some of the reasons why they came out here. They've been across the state. They've been across different areas of the United States in general. They've been featured in Forbes and a few other publications. They've actually got an established name for themselves, interestingly enough. But they came out here because there's a lot out in the Old Town area that people may not realize. For instance, the jail is apparently the site of 300 deaths of inmates, which is traced to the hanging tree. I will also tell you this, for those of you who are wondering, that there is some interesting information about the Sanderson County hanging tree. Now, if you've been to any of the Historical Commission's annual Heritage Day events, they do, of course, they have the annual hanging. They have a tree out there that they use as the hanging tree. And I think I could be wrong on this. So if you're from the Historical Commission, please don't berate me if I'm wrong on this, but if I'm not mistaken, I think they actually promote it as kind of like the new hanging tree in a way. I don't know entirely the story behind that, but they will tell you that the tree that they use specifically for the Heritage Day hangings, that's not the actual hanging tree. And the reason for that is because the actual hanging tree is damaged. I believe it was a lightning strike that damaged it. It's still a pretty big tree, but it doesn't have any limbs that come out that allow for hanging. It can't be used for that job anymore, but it is still there. It's actually off the corner of the Rosenwald School down there, and they did use some of their equipment on the actual hanging tree to see if they could find spirits there. But it is there, so if you ever go there and if you're wanting to look for it, you can find it. It's right there off of the Rosenwald School. They did use some of their equipment inside the Rosenwald School itself. They believe that there was a spirit of a school teacher in there, and they felt like they might possibly found spirits of the students in there. So it was an interesting little event. And of course, again, it was all about they want to give people the opportunity to really experiment with it and see whether or not if it's really for them, if they have any interest in ghost hunting. If you're still a skeptic about it, that's fine. Understandable. But at the very least, it was interesting to learn some of the history out there with our local historical buildings. So that's what we had going on here at Sanderson County. This week has been pretty quiet so far. As I'm speaking to you today, I'm recording this on the 20th of February, but we do have two events coming up at the end of the week on Saturday, and they're two pretty big events. The first one is the Trash and Treasure Trek. This is done by the Cold Spring Area Business and Merchants Association. They're also known as CABMA for short. Now, the Trash and Treasure Trek is a countywide garage sale, and when I say countywide, I mean countywide. You will have people, whether if it's individuals, you know, local citizens that may not even be affiliated with any of the organizations around here, or it could be organizations themselves. I've seen some of the local organizations like the senior centers, a few other organizations get involved in it. And Habitat for Humanity has also gotten involved in the Trash and Treasure Trek. A lot of people will just jump right into it. Basically, there will be maps provided for the event, but you will be able to find anyone from, you know, here in Cold Spring, Shepherd, out in Evergreen, even all the way out into Point Blank, Oakhurst, those areas. There's going to be someone out there that is setting up. And CABMA usually provides maps for the event. So if you know, of course, offhand me telling this, you're thinking, well, that's great, but I would really like to know where some of these places are. And they will have maps provided. You could probably find them. They'll have them provided here in the area. And we do have one other event. It's definitely an important one. It's with the Chamber. The San Jacinto County Chamber of Commerce, and that is the Best of San Jacinto County Awards. Their theme this year is based on the 60s and 70s peace, love, you know, the hippie sort of era. That's how they're doing it. It's sort of like San Jacinto County's version of the Academy Awards, I guess you could say. What it is prior to this event, which is held every February, San Jacinto County's chamber sends out sheets of paper that have categories that local citizens can actually vote on for best of a specific category. It can be best restaurant, best caterer, best breakfast, best bank, best citizen, you name it. There's plenty of categories. Usually, I don't know how many they're doing this year off the top of my head, but usually there's somewhere north of 40 categories. And you get to actually write in whatever you believe best fits that category. So if it's restaurant, you can literally pick anyone in the county. You could say El Taquito. You could say Joe's Italian, whoever you want. It could be anyone. They don't even necessarily have to be members of the chamber. It can be anyone you think fits that category. And they will tally up the votes, and in the award ceremony, they give out the awards for those organizations or businesses or people, whoever best fits those categories. It's a lot of fun. It's also a fundraiser. I do believe they're raising money for scholarships for local seniors here at Shepherd High School and Cold Spring Oakhurst High School. So it's also a good cause in the end. They do provide dinner, and it'll be a fun event. They'll definitely keep y'all up to date on some of the best results. And that's all I've got for San Jacinto County on this end. We'll hope to see y'all next week.
Over here on the west side of the coverage area in Trinity County, we had the Battle of Blackjack Grove last Saturday in Groveton. Yes, North versus South, Blue versus Gray, Union versus Confederate, squared off in the fourth annual Battle of the Blackjack Grove. We also have a feature on a quartet of Centerville High School seniors who played basketball. Taylor Diaz and Tristan Hance on the boys' side, Allison Carlton and Mary Watson on the girls' side, and Apple Springs ISD talked about school finance in their latest school board meeting. The commissioner's court heard from a pair of EMS directors, Keith Shelley from Ventura EMS over on the west part of the county, and David Robeson from Groveton EMS on the eastern part of the county. And a pair of Trinity City Councilmen are seeking re-election, Billy Gooden and Philip Morrison. Their two-year terms are set to expire. However, nobody opted to run against them, therefore they will run unopposed in May. In the world of sports, 7 Trinity powerlifters qualified for the region meet. One is an alternate. The other 6 are in, for sure.
Howdy, y'all. Megan Whitworth here for a news update on Houston County. The biggest headline today is that there is another but different type of IT services business considering settling down in Crockett. The business's name, and along with the name of the CEO, is being held under wraps while they search for the next place they're going to build their facility. Ever since the other IT company, Provalis, who was looking at either coming to Jasper or Crockett, formally declared Jasper the winner of their next home, their spirits have been dampened. It's been a little sad and people were frustrated with the situation, but hopefully this new company will select Crockett. And it's nice to have a little hope to see that there are other possibilities that could happen, and hopefully this will make people happy and that it will be a great opportunity for people to find jobs and to help better provide for their families. On February 15th, the unnamed company's CEO and other executives met with local leaders under the codename Project Big Heart. The CEO said the business, which is headquartered in Missouri and has a total of 4 facilities in the state and in Georgia, would add about 200 jobs to the Crockett employment role and economy if it decides to locate a facility here. The company currently has 400 employees in total with an annual payroll of $15.4 million and the annual revenue is $25 million. So the meeting was sponsored by Executive Director James Gentry of the Crockett Economic and Industrial Development Corporation, aka the CEIDC, and members of the CEIDC Board of Directors. And other attendees of the meeting included Crockett City leaders, Crockett ISD officials, and others. The CEO said the business is in the early phases of doing exploration, and right now, Crockett is the only city that they have visited. The CEO said, in quote, "We're very impressed with the people. We had a warm reception and saw a lot of progressive thinking in terms of workforce development, so we're excited. We have a good feeling about it. We want to get around and drive around and check the town out and do a little bit more of due diligence. And we'll see. We're looking forward to continuing the discovery." You can read the full article with more information and just more background about meeting with local officials. And the story begins on page 1A. And definitely keep watch on our Facebook page and on our website for the latest news that comes from this technology business. We will definitely be keeping readers up to date with what we hear and what we know. So cross your fingers, y'all. Houston County would be welcoming arms to this new IT business, and we definitely need the business here. So on to other news. Last weekend, the second annual Founders Day program, which recalls the history of and honors the legacy of the former Mary Allen Seminary College, which was established in Crockett for African Americans in 1886. It is now called the Mary Allen Museum of African American Art and History. The event had three main features: a keynote address presented by Pastor Henry Lovelady of Trinity's Clegg Chapel Baptist Church, a reflection of an alumni interview of 1942 and 1945 Mary Allen College honor graduate Johnny May Brooks Dell Thompson also spoke. Also taking place at the event was the passing of the leadership torch of the Mary Allen Museum to new president, Dr. Thelma J. Douglas. So Dr. Douglas, definitely congratulations on the new role. I loved this quote from Dr. Douglas that was stated at the end of Alton Porter's article. He wrote that Dr. Douglas had said, "What is the vision statement for the board of directors for Mary Allen Museum of African American Art and History?" The board of directors said the vision is let the Mary Allen College and Museum in Trinity be an academic, intellectual institution and skills training center that serve as a historical landscape for a cross-culture society in Houston County and the global world. Let us love one another as we forge forward in this journey of rebuilding, revitalizing, and restoring our historical institution. The enhancement of Mary Allen College to beautify one of Texas's endangered places. Let us learn together the steps to employ in our journey with peace and tranquility, using our skills to help reestablish Mary Allen College and display its artifacts in our museum. Let us come together. And I just thought that was a beautiful quote about the vision of the Mary Allen Museum. And it's just amazing to see a group of people come together to help benefit the history of such a historic college. And we definitely need more of that in Houston County because so much rich history that will definitely help the people as we keep moving forward. So definitely check out that article. Once again, reporter Alton Porter, he wrote a beautiful piece on the coverage, and that is on page 1A. We also have the coverage of the Crockett Area Chamber of Commerce members annual banquet held last Tuesday. The winners of the evening included Chamber Executive Assistant Eliza Clark. She received the Volunteer of the Year Award. Bonita Carpenter received the Ambassador of the Year Award. Leanne Henson, who is the chairperson of the Chamber's Board of Directors, received the Director of the Year Award. Julian Insurance Agency received the Business of the Year Award. And Houston County Judge Jim Level received the Citizen of the Year Award. Also hilarious, radio personality Tumbleweed Smith had the audience in tears and laughter tears. So you can definitely read all about the night in the latest issue and make sure to check out our Facebook page at HC Courier. We are going to be adding photos of the big night on our Facebook page. In the crime department, Houston County Sheriff's Office and Crockett Police Department assisted Huntsville PD in the search for an alleged criminal. Jarek Dion Sandals, 26, was arrested on three charges: aggravated sexual robbery, aggravated assault, and aggravated kidnapping, in connection with offenses that occurred during the evening hours of February 3rd in Huntsville. All charges are felonies of the first degree, and additionally, Sandals is charged with forgery of a financial instrument, a felony on the third degree, and possession of marijuana, a B misdemeanor. According to Lieutenant Kurt Landrum of HPD, the police department learned through the investigation that a male suspect had allegedly forced entry into the victim's apartment and produced a handgun. The suspect allegedly threatened to kill the victim before sexually assaulting and kidnapping her at gunpoint. The victim was forced to accompany the suspect to several locations in an attempt to withdraw cash. During the ordeal, the suspect repeatedly threatened to kill the victim if she tried to flee. According to the Huntsville Police Department, detectives were able to develop Sandals as a suspect in the offenses that occurred in early February through evidence located at the scene. He was identified, a warrant was issued for Sandals' arrest on the felony charges, and he was arrested on February 12th, and he is currently being held at the Walker County Jail on all five charges with bonds of $200,000 each on the first degree felonies, a $3,000 bond on the third degree felony, and a $1,000 bond on the B misdemeanor, for a total of $604,000. And just a little legal report on that, a degree felony carries a punishment range from 5 to 99 years in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and a possible fine up to $10,000. A third degree felony carries a punishment range from 2 to 10 years in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and a possible fine not to exceed $10,000. And a B misdemeanor carries a punishment up to 100 days in the county jail and a possible fine not to exceed more than $2,000. So also included in our latest issue is updates on the latest Kennard ISD school board meeting, updates on local sports teams, lots of rodeo news, and so much more. So make sure to grab the latest issue of the Courier. And as always, we're always updating our Facebook page at HC Courier and our website, which is also hccourier.com. And just a little side note, colds and sicknesses are continuing making their way around East Texas, including myself. So make sure to wash your hands, don't drink after people, and if you're sick, especially with the flu, stay home. Well, that is all in my neck of the woods. I hope y'all have a great rest of the week, and till next time, y'all.